Good evening and thank you for joining us. I'm Jake Force. We begin tonight with Langlade County resident Emily Scher, who cared for her horse Jimmy for most of his 4-year life. She was shocked to find him dead from a gunshot wound this weekend at her family farm.
Folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Condolences to Jimmy. Oh my goodness, I feel for the owner. I love my pets, but could the news up there get any weirder?
It hit me hard that morning. Yeah, she called him several times, and it's not unusual for him to just lay there, apparently. But this time he didn't get
up. That's horrific. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's terrible, actually.
It's terrible. I feel for the people, but if the news in the Northwoods gets any, that is the real deal, folks. That is, if you hear the laugh in the middle, that's Jay watching the morning news, and he goes, I better record this on my phone. We never found out the gift card, the dumpster gift card of destiny.
That reporter is still working there. I'm going to contact him somehow and ask if he ever found out or did a follow-up piece on it. That would be good. That's the only way to truly find out.
Mm-hmm. What happened there? He had an arrangement, he said. Mm-hmm. So, boys, that is where the Minocqua News is where you go to start your career or go to die. So it's hard hitting at its best. That is ridiculous. Condolences for that. But man, if you can't go, wow, that's bizarre. That is bizarre. We got people shooting horses up there, Jay. What's wrong with you guys?
It's winter, I guess.
I've made a list of what I think it is, but I would rather hear it from you of what it is. So anyway, peeking, looking, if you haven't seen this, 4-day frenzy. Oh my goodness, I just did the voice and I forgot, Jay. I forgot about reading the back of packages last week. So,
that's right.
Package reading. Uh-oh. But
shoot, I don't have anything ready.
There, I did the monster truck voice and thing. But anyway, the shops have got it here. 4-day frenzy.
Yeah, it goes through Sunday night. So hopefully you listen to this thing in time.
Yeah. What is it?
To cash in on an amazing sale at the Muskie Shop, biggest one of the year.
Well, we're getting to the bitter end of hearing anything new. Are you hearing any grumblings outside of the Magnus? Anything else coming out? I know we got the
Livingston Magnus. Yeah, what is that? 2 weeks away now. 2 weeks away.
2 weeks. I don't know if we said it last week, March 4th, homeboy, mark it on your bait buying calendar, March 4th. The other cool thing is the planer boards very shortly.
Yeah. There's about a million people just scratching at the bit for those.
This is flat out when it comes to stuff, you know, that was a hard working project we got done there to get those boards the way they run. And boys, get them. I don't want to push. Get them while you can. Those are actually still manufactured. There's not like a machine that stamps out the finished planer board. They're a pain in the butt to make, even on the large scale. And so what me and Jay saw on those planer boards for the people that are signed up are a slightly over how many we're getting. Right. So you better be, we're going to let you guys know, and I'm not trying to, but people that have been waiting forever for blade planer boards, we will tell you when they're going to come out so you can actually get them. I hate to say
for
that,
sure.
But it's
give you a heads up.
Livingston ordered as many ordered and coming as they could, but there's more people that want them than got them. So, we will warn the podcasters. You will get fair warning when those bad boys are showing up at the shop, and when nobody else is going to have them first. That's the fun thing. That's why me and Jay know each other. You got the Magnus. That's going to be exciting. Jay's got some video stuff. Old Steve Areno shot another thing. Did a breakdown. I think it'll come out, in a couple of days, Jay, on Tuesday or whatever?
Should be Tuesday. Yeah.
Just sitting down. Just me. It's like, Jay, it's like point of view. It's just me and you.
But and a table. You,
and a table. It's like sitting down with an old friend.
Good stuff. Yeah.
That talks like a car salesman. Right?
Oh, not really. No.
All right, folks.
Come on now.
All right. Just it's a point of view. It's a point of view video, Jay. It's a point. Just me. Not you. When I say you, I don't mean Jay. I'm just me and you. Sitting down at the old kitchen table. And I walk you through the Magnus. Parts and pieces.
The Magnus Madness.
Magnus Madness. Why have we not? Why has it been like I've had this bait going for like in my brain for 2 years and you just now say that? You're a real asshole, Jay. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks. Yep. I bring these things up at the last minute. You know me.
Thanks for really coming in. I could have been saying that for months, but no.
That could be the title of the video.
Yeah, wow. That wouldn't be really exciting of me sitting at the kitchen table. It's dumb. No, what it is, in all seriousness, just mad.
It's not a letdown, okay, folks? Believe me, it's not a letdown.
No, I'm being too. No, seriously, sit down and kind of break this thing down, what's going on with the bait so you can see all the features of the creature. And then, Jay, I don't think it's been shown before, the special little tail section there. Ooh, there's what to look for.
Yeah, the new one. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there's a bit of a something you're going to see for the first time in that video for El Magnus in there.
It's cool.
Says Jay.
It's a cool one.
Says Jay.
I'm telling you, Steve, that's a good bait. Jay, you got to check this thing out.
Hell of a camp counselor. Hell of a. It's cool. Come on, kids. I'm teasing. Picking on myself. I can't say it's cool. Now Magnus rocks. So anyway, that's going on. Kind of another thing, a little people, you know, what's going on here? Talk to a good Canadian dude, Jay. Got another couple sneakies here. Good dude there in Canada. Right?
Okay.
We got a custom bait here coming here shortly that is just bad to the bone. He sent me a sample, probably late summer, early summer, of this really cool bait. I'm not going to say what it is, but I'm excited about that because it's a super small batch, custom Canadian bait here that is like if you can imagine like a musky size wiggle wart on crack. It's bad to the bone. So we'll have more on that here shortly. Other than that, Jay, how miserable are you? How freezing is it?
It's going to be nasty tomorrow. I think it's supposed to be a high of 2. I'm serious. It's going to be 2.
Oh, man.
Oh, you know, winter, whatever. Yeah.
I would complain because I can. It has been just dismal crap. The same thing.
Well, yeah, you got a cold week, coming up, too. Just nasty for guiding.
Yeah, you 30s? You went from 70. We had that one freak 70 day.
Yeah.
And it is literally all four seasons in a week, every week now. It's like, oh, 3 days of 30, then it's 60. Then it's like, I don't know if anybody else is the way I am. Like when the weather shifts real hard, it just head pressure like crazy. So I just feel whacked out of my head. Anyway, I figured it'd be, you know, important, Jay. Important. Get everybody's brains kind of focused in. We did the Steve Stash. We'll do some more here before we get here, because we're kind of coming off the end of winter. We're getting close to it, believe it or not, for most of the people. You get into March, people start thinking spring break here in a second, right?
Taking musky trips.
Right.
It yeah, for sure.
Getting there and starts firing up. I thought, you know, I'm just riffing here, but go back over some highlight stuff. I want to talk some structure here in a second and talk some just general stuff, right? Go down the rabbit hole on a few things, get everybody's brain refocused a bit, right? But, you know, we've been kind of gabbing all year about the new gear. And I got a call today, good client, good friend of mine, called asking about reels, you know, and it's the same thing with reels. What reels? And that's fine. But, you know, one thing I was going to say is, well, there's another secret thing with reels, Jay. I forgot about that. That's coming soon. But, you know, when it comes to these reels, something that bears repeating, you know, and Jay and I've said it in the past, and when you're looking at reels, go in and at least hold some of these reels if you have the opportunity. Some of you don't live anywhere where you can like go in and check out, say at the shop, a Tranx or a Pro-Rex or whatever. But before you're buying reels, get a feel for what the frame size of a reel is, right? I personally think with musky rods and reels overall, you know, it's far more important that it feels right, it's comfortable, than everybody should have a 400, right? That's the standard, right? Every you know, Tranx 400 or the 400 size dial, or that has kind of like become the thing. Whereas there's some people that benefit that 300 size or things that are in between. You know what I'm saying? It's like everybody's like 400 across the board. Where the conversation I had today was that it doesn't have to be a 400 size reel to fish for muskies. Don't be afraid of a 300, whether it be, you know, 13 fishing had one, Tranx, or obviously there's the 300 Tranx, then there's all kinds of 300 size reels. There's the Shimano. What is the green one, Jay?
Curado?
No, Curado's not green. Is it Curado? It is green, isn't it?
Well, it used to be green.
But yeah. I think the Curado. But just as a thing, because there's a lot of dudes that are, okay, hey, I need this, I need that. It's time to gear back up. You know, crap broke last year. You didn't like your setup, or we're getting it as the Curado. You're getting geared up here. Don't be afraid of some of these 300 size reels. The Curado, you know, the 200 is going to be a little bit shy. But even like small hands, female anglers, stuff like that, you can get into a 200 size reel and it's going to work for muskies. And just as a reminder, friendly reminder, Jay, there are no muskie reels. None. None of these reels are solely made for muskie fishing. In a shocking twist, right? Shimano. Do you know why Shimano makes reels, Jay? You ever thought about this, by the way? Why does Shimano make reels?
Please tell.
Shimano is a gear company. They make gears for bicycles, and they start as a company that makes gears,
right? Yeah,
and that's kind of the thing. They make great reels, but you know, they're not like a muskie company. They're making, because they came from manufacturing gearing, they go, okay, bam 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 bam, we get into fishing. That's, I'm not saying that's what they do now, but they've also obviously developed fishing, but kind of started from being a gear manufacturer. You know, they've got to look at worldwide appeal. So, you know, a Tranx 500, you know, kind of an inshore. I mean, these are all multi-purpose. That's what I'm saying, because I've had multiple conversations over the last week. Muskie reels. There are reels that you can use for muskies. There is no muskie reel. And I think that's a very freeing concept, if that makes sense, right? You don't have to have this. You don't have to have that. There is no reel that is designed for muskies. People that are selling muskie gear, like, you know, the muskie shop or whomever, is going to say this is a muskie reel, but these are not, it's not a prerequisite. You know, does that make any sense, Jay? Does it resonate with you? What I'm saying is, like, these are just large platform reels. And when Akuma or Abu or whoever makes them, they're not going, this is a muskie reel or a pike reel. This is a large frame reel, so you can get away with anything, is what I'm getting at. Don't just feel like, hey, it has to be this because everybody says that.
Yeah. You know? That's right. That's right.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. just a thought. The other thing that's come up is, you know, live imaging, Jay. It's been a thing, right? Everybody talks about it. We talk about it. You go, hey, what's going on here? Where is it accessible? And it kind of started with one of these deals where, you know, I think my original setup, I'm riffing off the top of my head, but I want to say like 4,500 bucks, I think, is what I was in for it, or five, you know.
Which your original setup, you said?
For just live imaging.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, I'm a big advocate when we're using live imaging that we do it in a smart manner. I'm not going to sit here and preach at you. Who cares? But something I've been keeping my eye on, if you guys are looking for this, you say, hey, you know, I'm mainly using for a patterning tool, for identifying bait fish, all this fun stuff you can get out of it. Kind of blown away because Lowrance has a new all-in-one unit, Jay, for $1,000 now. So, and I love my Lowrant stuff, but it's, we don't talk like heavy this or that all the time. But I was, you know, you find yourself, you're thumbing through your phone, blah, 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 and you're looking at it. And you go, but if it's something you're looking, if live imaging is something you're looking to add to your musky game, and it's so powerful as a patterning tool. I'm just going to, you know, sitting there and scoping fish, moving on. I got better things to do. But seeing a follow, you know, seeing where bait fish are actually staged in real time, how they're reacting is really powerful. You guys know that. But that was something that was cool that came out that really caught my eye. It's the Lowrant Eagle Eye 9, right? And for $1,000, you've got live imaging. And I thought that was neat that they're finally knocking the price point down on that. Obviously, if you don't like live imaging, you know, that's not neat. But if you like live imaging, it's pretty neat that it's $1,000, right?
So you're saying it's all in one? All sounds in like one, it's a yeah. 9-inch screen. So yeah, you can run inch. Like a split screen and run, okay, I got my live imaging going on the left and I got downscan on the right type deal?
You can do all that, but the problem is that the second you do live imaging, you don't want anything else on the screen. You want a dedicated screen for that because, one of the most important things when it comes to live imaging, at least for me, is to use it accurately. And it's like today, Jay, the fish that hit the boat, saw it on the follow. There it comes. Hadn't seen anything all day. Bam, bam, bam. Boom. There it is. Right? There yeah. it is. Better figure eight. Blah, blah, blah. But with live imaging and using that screen, it seems the most important thing to me is consistency in that setup. So you have a very good feel for scale, right? So typically I only have mine shooting about 50 feet down the side of the boat, right? So it's coming from the nose of the boat down the side. I can see everybody's figure eights. It's all I'm worried about. But I can tell you from using it so much how big a fish is, right? Because the scale, the distance that I'm looking at, and my forward distance, how far I'm looking out from the beam, and then the depth, I keep at the same settings, right? And so that consistency helps opposed to like bopping between screens. And a lot of what I'm looking for, I'm not looking for muskies. I'm looking for bait fish, right? And I've learned a ton about different bait fish through live imaging. So if it's something you, like I said, if you're looking to crawl down the rabbit hole or add that to your thing, and I mean, like I said, I use it, you know, to each their own, but man, that's the best buy-in I've seen for pretty good live imaging. You know, for $1,000, you're not getting like the Cadillac. I'm still running, I was going to ramble about it much, but I'm still running not the very first gen, but like not the latest and greatest on the Garmin because I'm so used to it, right? And I know it well. I know everything that's happening there. I'm very comfortable with it. Whereas, you know, the new iteration, you might get this, you might get that, you know. But with the Lowrant that I was looking at here, it has all the features to do what you need to do for musky fishing, you know, in a general sense where you're going, you can pattern bait fish, you know, you're going, okay, how big is the average crappie in this crappie school, right? Are these tiny dinkersteins or are these, you know, are these big crappie? You know, you leave your scale, the actual scale of the imaging, you go, oh, okay, well, that's where the big crappie hang out. And you learn it, and you learn it, and you're like, okay, well, that's kind of a small... And you start seeing all these things you would never have a clue were taking place. You know, how fish are staged on... And we've talked about it before, that downscan sonar is a different... it's in the past. It was behind you. It's not a real time. But I think the most powerful thing for live imaging is identifying how much bait fish are moving, identifying, you know, size class of bait fish, having a feel for that, and allowing you to go, okay, bait fish or all the bait fish or the vast majority of what I'm saying are located, you know, 2 feet off the bottom. Well, guess what we need to do, right? Or they're located this or that. So super, super powerful as far as that tool. But I thought that was worth bringing up. We don't harp on electronics too terribly much.
No, it's a good trend to see the price kind of coming down on these things. That's great. It's going in the right direction, I guess.
Yeah, everybody and their brother's going to be, everybody, you know, it is what it is. I'm not sitting here, you know, without it being the debate, I'm so sick of frick. If there was one more thing that people need to get on their soapbox about, you know, and so that's why we try to stay out of it. I use it, don't care. You know, if you're not allowed to use it, I won't use it. If you're allowed to use it, I'll use it. You know, it's Herbeck and I had a private combo, but I don't think he'd be mad when I said it. It's like, I think with live imaging, it's how you use the tool, right? I mean, you know, if you're sitting there following the same fish around for 30 minutes, just harassing the crap out of it, that ain't my bag. You know what I'm saying? But if you're using it as a patterning tool or catching an odd follower and seeing something, it's all about how you use it. You know, that's the deal. I could sit here and I'm preventing myself, Jay, from soapboxing on that. I'm trying my damnedest.
I can see that.
You know, okay. I could go there. Little restraint. But that was interesting. So on the electronics front, right? But I said, as far as structure, and we've gotten a bunch of emails about it, and I kind of try to save a lot of it from we're doing the Steve Stash there. But, you know, how to identify structure, right? Taking it to its core element, taking it down to bite-sized chunks, right? Because I know at times, you know, you look at whether it be the book, like Next Level Muskie Fishing, or it be a video or whatever, it can be dense at times, right? So I want to at least talk about this from the amount of question we've got in this kind of wheelhouse. Is how do we start from ground zero, right? And this is a good refresher for anybody. You're gearing up, you're going to do your spring muskie trip, or you're thinking about opener here. How do we identify important structures in a body of water, right? First and foremost, we're going to do our mapping homework, right? To sound like a motivational speaker, your success on the water starts at home, Jay, before you ever left, right?
Step number one.
So we want to have a pretty good concept of what's taking place.
Sure.
You know, I look at it through a different lens, where so many years it was just like, okay, well, going over to, you know, Suckatobin, we need to switch legs. Okay, we got to switch legs. Great. We've switched legs. Now we've gone to whatever leg. Wonderful. Great. You're just launching at the launch and going as you go and trying to figure it out as you go, right? And using, you know, shoreline clues, all these different clues as a means to, you know, kind of guess of what's taking place if you didn't have a detailed map, you know. And there's a lot of times where you go, this is a lost opportunity. Had I had a map ahead of time, this is back in the day, opposed to spending half the day or a lot of time dialing in on things. You go, oh, I found a hump, I found a point, and I caught a muskie, right? Well, the first key is to do that map study and have either an actual notebook or something in your phone or some way, whether you, if you got a great, good memory, whatever, where you have this library of possibility in your head, right? So the most pragmatic way I can express to someone as a means to adopt structure fishing is using your map study as a means to produce this library of possible locations. Right. That's step one. Okay. Now we can filter through the said possible locations or the areas that we're going to target and have a deeper understanding of what will be productive when based on seasonality, based on patterns and current weather issues. Right. But we have no starting place if we do not have an understanding of the structural elements in a body of water. In a shocking twist, right, Jay? Most people just launch their boat and go out there and throw at something. They have no clue, right? So if
we go out and look for weeds.
Go out and look for weeds. Okay, we've found weeds. Well, to that tip of the hat, maybe I go out and look for weeds and I find muskies guy. Well, guess what I can help you do through structure fishing way faster? Find weeds. right? If we've sat down with a map and we've identified the littoral zone, generally 12 to zero, areas that are 12 feet to zero, which could be the entire edge of the lake, and it could also only be small areas, you're narrowing down your scope of search, right? Just to find weeds. So if we want to find weeds, we know that X, Y, and Z zones we've done our map study on are going to be most likely to hold weeds, right? Based on a fact. The fact being you need photosynthesis to grow vegetation. That zone's really 12 to zero, right? Now we've mentally highlighted or actually highlighted or however we've done it, we've narrowed our scope of search, right? Now, that is way faster than taking the bed out there and combing the edges looking for weeds, right? We have narrowed areas, we have eliminated areas, things of that nature, right? So you can quickly identify an area that would be weedy versus areas that would not, based upon understanding the structural elements, where the breaks are, what is going on there, right? So from a core tool, if you've never added structure fishing into your musky fishing or any fishing in general, and you're just a weed thrower, starting there, and you go out to a new body of water, or you can look at, say, you know, a Lake Jay, and people do this all the time. I know where the best weed beds are on so-and-so lake, right? I've heard it a million times. They know.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, great, cool.
Yeah.
All right. You will often find, if not always find, if you sit down and look at your lake that you know well and you know the weeds are, it will adhere to these same rules. Right? So the rules of structural elements for shallows and weeds, that is just is what it is, right? All right. So what you often find if you say you're on your lake and you know, and I already know where all the weeds are. And if you look at structural maps of your body of water, you're actually going to find more things, or you're going to find the things that interconnect, right? And what we're doing is you're able to expand areas that you're fishing as well, right? So why does that play? Why does that matter? Well, you know, this lake that you know well, and there's the weeds. Well, often people are just going up and they're fishing that weed edge. They're missing subsurface weeds. They're missing things that are tapering off. You might find a break on the outside. You might find different elements that are leading into those littoral zone weeds, right? So that is like the first baby step. And I think if it's something that you're trying to wrap your head around, and that's it's going to be your first eureka, your first light bulb moment, right? You're going to sit down and go, these are the hot spots, and you'll see that the break line comes up, and there is a direct corollary, 1 + 1 = 2, to the subsurface structure and the cover you're already comfortable fishing, right? Once that goes, okay, well, these rules apply and everything jives, you start looking away from that. You start looking for other elements, right? And furthermore, like, you know, for practical application, today kind of reiterated I need to cover some of these topics from the questions. So today was not Fast and Furious, Jay, at all, right? This was like suck weather, mm-hmm. right? But
yeah.
About to call it, go up, bam, 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 hook up, right? Sometimes you net them, sometimes you lose them. But you get the eat, right? Go in, get the eat on this fish, right? Fish the place out and go, all right, let's hit this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are no weeds right now. It is truly a structural bite, right? It's truly just subsurface structure. And you go, okay, well, I have this mental library of things that fall into this through extensive map study. So instantaneously, I'm able to go to 2, 3, 4, depending on how I want to travel, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 or a million places, right? Depending on your body of water, that check the same boxes. So another practical application of structure fishing and study is that we're able to instantly identify similar areas, right? So back to the weed bite, right? Because that's the baseline. Everyone starts at weeds and bucktails. Everybody starts there. Well, I've seen it numerous times. Guy's out fishing. He gets a follow. Oh, we missed him. And he continues out through his day to throw at weeds. Right? Pretty common, right, Jay?
Pretty common. Absolutely.
Pretty common. Well, if you don't have a deeper understanding of structure, you're not realizing what is taking place where you had the follow. Because just because it's a weed edge, it means nothing. The weeds are secondary to the structural elements, right? So you may have got your follow right where the weeds break off into deeper water, but you've spent the rest of your day pounding things that are not aligning to what that fish had told you, right? Where you can dial it in so deep and you go, okay, well, and a perfect example, Jay, out on the one lake, we've done the trolling, we've done, you know, Freddie's been out, all that stuff, right? That one lake, you got the east and the north and that lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, okay, how many times, you know, you go, they're on this break line, we need weeds at X, Y, and Z. We need weeds at, you know, 10 feet. Or it moves in or it moves out of an edge, right? Where people often think it's just this arbitrary thing. They're, the fish are over there, and there happened to be shoreline cover there. So now you throw at all that shoreline cover. Well, yes, it will work eventually. But the trick with musky fishing, we have narrow bite windows. We have narrow windows of opportunity. Okay, I don't care what you attribute it to. You can attribute it to, you know, you can attribute it to moon phase. You can attribute it to witchcraft. I don't care. There are short bite windows. So if I come into an area, I finally get an interaction with the muskie. My first move is to, obviously after a throwback attempt or something like that, my first move is to mentally go through what is happening right now at this very second and how do I capitalize on it? Which is, you go, okay, where's the boat position? Did it come off of pure cover? Did it come off of pure structure? What did it come off of? Where did the fish come from, right? Where am I positioned with my boat? How long was my cast? And what other places immediately do I know of that check all these same boat, all the same boxes? They hit all the same notes, right? Because it does you no good to say, if we're in, say, a bowl-shaped bay, right, Jay? You go in this bowl-shaped bay, and I've seen a million times, people go in this bowl-shaped bay, and they move one on the very entrance coming into this bay. They move one there. But then we fish out the entire bay and we move one on the other outside corners we're coming out, right?
Right. The only distinctive structure.
Right. But they go, they're in the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually when you have a bay, you got points, you got weeds. So is it weedy points or was it the bay? Right. Analyze what just happened, right? And it's soapboxing here, but I'm having fun with it now. Which is, we often hyperfixate on what's wrong, right? Musky anglers, they're not hitting this. They're not doing that. They're not following this. They're not following. There's a lot of no's, right? But when you have that engagement, you have a positive interaction. What did I do right? Because it's not random. It's just not, folks. It's just not random, you know. Muskies just don't roll the dice and say, I'm going to be here today. Right. There's a method and to the madness. It's all, there's no thought process. They're doing what's easiest for them. And so understanding structure and having a heightened understanding of where you're fishing, you can hyper analyze when something goes right. As much as you want to go home and lay on the pillow, and we've all done it, Jay. You go home, you lay down, you lay in bed and go, woulda, shoulda, coulda, if I, right? Had I turned wider in the figure eight? Had I done this and this? Had I done this and I done that? If I only had one more chance at that fish. All right. But on the water is the time to hyperfix on what just happened. What took place that was positive? What is going on right now? Okay. What I need to look at? I need to look at my boat positioning. I need to look for environmental interplay, you know, which is there weather coming in? Is there weather going out? Has the wind shifted? Is the wind hitting this bank differently than it's hit anywhere else? Right. Is there something, is there a transition in the cover? Is there, what's going on? And look at it. And the second you identify it, there's always something. I hate to say it, but there's always something that's being missed by most people when something is happening that's good. Everybody gets really excited. They move a fish, they're excited, or they catch a fish, and then they're not analyzing what went right. Right? I'm getting away from structure here a little bit, but it they all interplay. It's all the same act, but I think it might be even more important to look at that moment and go, what took place right now, right here, right now, that ended up with a strike, a follower, a muskie in the net, right? Once you
and if you could do that, it'll lead to a second fish more than likely doing something wrong
now,
the rest of the day.
The trick with the practical application of structure is how do we know where to go? Right? How do we know where to go? I think about it, the concept of man goes out, man throws bucktail, man catches muskie. Right? He cannot tell you why. He cannot tell you anything of what happened. You know, ugh, smash, rock. That is caveman fishing. Right? Ooga, ooga. You know, you don't have to be a great orator, but it starts going your way more often when you go, what happened? And some guys can go, all right, well, it got dark. The sun went down. Me throw bucktail, me catch fish. Right? Great. So we've gone from has no clue what happened to has identified that there was a change in the environment. Great. Okay. Then the next step is understanding that, you know, there was cover involved or there were bait fish involved. Check. And then we go up to looking further down the road until, you know, you get to the point where you go, okay, these are the structural elements that are in play. These are what they would use depth range wise. This is what the bait's doing, right? The bait seasonality says that they will use X, Y, and Z areas. And then it just goes down the rabbit hole where you're narrowing where you have to even look, right? So the practical use of structure fishing is to analyze what just happened that was positive, while being able to identify other places you can go to immediately when things are opening up or a bite window is opening up, but also to eliminating a lot of wasted time, right? So if we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that muskies are on mid-depth breaks, we know that. We know that they are patterned because of bait, because of seasonality, that muskies are holding somewhere between, say, 8 and 12. Right? It's a typical mid-depth break. They're holding between 8 sure. and 12. Mm-hmm. There might be some vegetation present there, depending on time of year. Let's not pinpoint a time of year, but we just know that they're between 8 and 12 feet. Okay, well, we've now eliminated all of the area shallower than 8, right? Let's say there's humps in the middle of the rock or reef. We're able to just cross these things out of our mind where you don't have to go check them. And a lot of people approach muskie fishing or just fishing in general where what are the good spots, right? Jay, you've heard that a gazillion times.
Yeah.
What are the good spots? Well, there's no good spots. there are productive structures and covers that it's productive areas of structure and productive sections of cover that are productive, right? It's not that the fish manifesting a spot, something that is like a known spot on a body of a lake, right? A body, like take whatever lake you want to name or whatever river, anything. They're always there, you know, The old crusty guy at the boat ramp, Tony. Oh, they're catching the hell out of the muskies over
there. They're always there, but it wasn't the middle of a weed line.
Right.
It was a structural element. It might have been off of weeds, but it was a structural element, and that's what they mean by spot. So start thinking that way.
Yeah, exactly. Don't go, there's a spot. And once you kind of take that step and go, okay, let's see. I like it quite a bit when, you know, old crusty insert, he's filthy, Jay, smells like walleye, you know, maybe a cigar.
We're eating like hell over there,
you know. Once you look at these areas that are the quote unquote spots or the known quantities on any body of water, and you start looking at them structurally, you go, ah, there's something there. The fish in this body of water like this. Okay. But so these places, these spots are productive because of X, Y, and Z, and kind of cutting through the bullshit and cutting through the mystique and going, what is happening? What is conducive to muskies? What makes this an area that they want to be? Right? Then I've done this so many times. There's like the community spot, right?
That's where all the muskies is.
You look at that, and everybody is dogpiled over there. And you look at the map, and you go, oh, buddy. Well, if this is working, guess what? There's four more. And nobody's paying attention to them. Right? And sometimes simply bodies of water are so small. Some of the Wisconsin inland lakes are like, you know, you got your point, you got your bar, you got your hump. Good luck. Right? But on bigger bodies of water or medium-sized bodies of water, you're not going to find every fish in the lake. You'll find them on similar structure. And I think the back to trying to keep it pragmatic or really useful on the jump for people is you're going to view the lake differently, right? So how do we start doing that? Right? How do we kind of take the first step into this? Like we said, set down. Break your map down. I think it's super important to have a physical copy of a map, right? I've said it before. I'll say it again. You can't really view a lake as an entirety on your fish finder or your iPad and really have the same scale, right? The actual visual scale, you know, unless you've got it on your, you know, like I go to the living room, I got a freaking 80-inch TV. I could throw it up there. That's as bigger than the map, but like a physical map is bigger than your screen. You know what I'm saying? Unless you got a big monitor. So having that scale to see it, you know, and the classic marking your map, color coding your map, and then doing that on your fish finder. We were talking about fish finders earlier. We don't answer a lot of electronic questions on here. It's not our cup of tea, but, you know, it's something that comes up all the time when I'm talking with anglers, you know, what unit or what this or what that or buy this or heck, we're talking about that thing. I don't care what unit I'm buying. If it's my mapping unit, it has to have the ability to color code things, or I have no interest in having it. That's like the deal breaker, right? Because guess what I'm doing with that in a practical way is drop me off on a new lake, right? Somewhere I've never fished. Well, I know my color coding is, and I typically go from like red to blue, right? And every shade in between. And I'll break it down in like, you know, 2 to 4 foot increments, just depends. Well, I go to a new body of water, go bam, I understand where all the areas are break-wise, right? So I know that we've got a lot of this or a lot of that. So just from color coding, then quickly, if I really don't know a lake well, if you're just, because it happens to me more often than I care to admit, where I have to go fish some random lake. You're filming this stuff for the muskie shop, or you got to get this for Livingston. Just here I am, random lake, my boat, go. Dance, monkey, dance. Jay, you've been on the boat for a bunch of those. Right, sure. Go monkey, dance, catch muskie. Oh crap! Well, let me look at the lake real quick. Okay, blah, blah, blah. you know, haven't had time to prep. Well, the way I do that is go, okay, what are the conditions? What's going on? Blah, 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 blah. But I instantaneously have that on my fish finder. So that's like the deal breaker for me. It can have like the world's worst down scan beam. I don't care. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Just give me color coded mapping. That's going to be most important there. But that practical usage translates from paper map to your onboard electronics, because you've done this tactile thing, you've spent time with it, and you've really looked at it. And like I said, wrap it up, and I'll shut up about it. The most practical use for people that are fishing weekends or getting into the game heavily is a quick the ability to quickly shift your game plan to known quantities, right? You have no guesswork. Muskies are on X, Y, and Z. I don't care what they're on, right? They're on shallow weeds. Great. That's the easiest pattern there is. Well, now there's no guesswork. We have a really narrow window where they should be. Or they're on, you know, the flip side of the coin, they're on submerged humps at 18 feet, right?
Yeah.
Take the weeds out of it. Let's go to the real big boy stuff. They're on humps 18 feet down. Okay. Well, I've done my map study. I can find them, right? If I have a good quality map and I've marked it, bam. You've identified that already. You have a clue. So maybe there's 100 humps in the lake. Maybe there's 4. But you're going to be far more comfortable getting there quickly. You know, it's a speed thing. I mean, it's like anything to take out the steps of, well, we got to go look for this. We just caught one off of this. And back to what I was saying, though, in the same regard of identifying what just happened positively, right? You're not going to be able to, like, sit there with crayons and call your map and go, me no structure fishing, me color good, right? You're not going to magically just break out the Crayolas and become a structure fisherman without being able to identify and analyze what just happened positive.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you don't, like I said, you don't have to give a great, you don't have to be an amazing order to say this, but you need to go realistically what is taking place, right? Is it break line, point, bait fish present? Is it, you know, submerged humps? What is happening? Nothing is random. There's no just random. Right? Something took place. So that's going to be the power move. Does that make sense, Jay? Sometimes I just start rambling.
It makes sense. Yeah, no, you did just a fine job. It's just what I was thinking when you're talking about that is just discount the weeds entirely. For a day, right? Just say weeds. I don't care if you're on a lake that has weeds. You're on a body of water right now that has no weeds. You're solely structure fishing. There's lakes in my, you know, neck of the woods that are, you know, rock based and have very, very little rock, you know, weed cover. There are other lakes where on certain years the weeds don't grow very well. And so maybe half the lake doesn't have weed cover like it normally does. Okay. That's where you take that studying to heart and you try to apply it. And you're like, okay, structural elements are going to be more in play than ever before, and you're not going to just, you find yourself dependent on weed edges all day.
And
you're eliminating good windows of opportunity. You're just throwing them right out the door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, if you spend 2 hours going, okay, we saw a fish on a weed line when we came out here, you know, on a, and like you said, average lake, you know, my neck of the woods, you know, where there's so many 200 acre lakes, we're talking about, you know, normal size lakes, right, that are bigger. So it's like people fish these weed lines and you could spend 2 hours slowly, even methodically fishing a weed line, trying to replicate that one follow you had, when in fact, you're not just incorporating any of these structural elements inside your thought process, which could cut down on wasted time.
Well, it parlays. I mean, another conversation I had in the boat about, actually two conversations I've had here recently, you know, about how I fish through an area. right?
Mm-hmm.
Man, we're covering this. Yeah, we are. We are saturated, you know, the saturation casting through the roof, right? Because they're there, right? The Muskies are there. We've narrowed it down to the most likely place, the most, you know, just through process elimination, structurally, condition-wise. If the electronics tell me the bait fish are present, they are there. We're no longer looking. We're trying to catch, right? So why would I blare through an area that I know a muskie's in? I'm going to check every bump and stump and come at it through multiple angles with multiple presentations and come through it multiple times. I go whammo, bammo, fish and net.
Yeah, you're focusing your time more efficiently.
It's a, there you go. And it's all efficiency opposed to like, and even to the same token, speaking of, man, I said head pressure, oh, my ear just went. Speaking of, you know, of efficiency and you're talking about the weed line. It's even probably resonates even more to people on lakes that don't have any weeds, right? Where it becomes this endless bank beating. There's not even weed beds to hit. It's just all bank, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's even worse. Now, to the person that has caught muskies off of a shoreline that is quote unquote featureless or is lacking vegetation, now everything's suspect. At least the weed guys narrowed it down to the weeds, right? And I think the propensity to fish weeds is most muskie anglers that you've always heard of and all this stuff, they fish in the when it warms up and they fish the little musky season in the summer and then they're done, right? And then and then by the time stuff's getting good, they're putting their rods away and it's time to go hunt us up a deer, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's deer time. Well, no, it's not. Shit's just getting good, right? But you know, when you have that level of success, and I think everybody's journey starts with bucktails and weeds, and you go from there. It's like, okay, you just never break out of that mold, and you go, okay, well, they're just not eating, they're just not this, they're not that. But the practical thing to do is analyze what is happening, and you take it to that guy that's fishing the weedless environment or just edges. Where is he not going to look now, right? We've all been there. You might be there now, or you might have moved past it. You know, where do you start? Where do you end? Where do you apply your efforts? And that's what structure fishing allows you to do. It's a way to analyze the body of water, right? So being able to put muskies and relegate them to certain areas, right? Okay, so we know this says that muskie should be in X, Y, and Z depth. Now we're able to apply this, and we're eliminating giant areas of water so that we can most effectively fish.
Yes. Yes. Don't think random. No. I'm going to pick off a random fish. If you have that mindset, you're going to be wasting half your day.
Wasting your whole life.
Wasting your whole life.
I mean, I say this, and I don't. Everybody has a different metric of success. Everyone does, as you should, right?
Yeah, right, right.
But the whole, you know, we spend whatever. I'll think of the horror story. We go to, you know, we go to Papa Jawea Lake every year for 30 years. I sure hope I catch one someday. I've heard it. You've heard it, Jay.
I've heard it too. Sure.
You're in year 20. Cousin Eddie had a follow. What? How? Right? And that's an extreme case. You look at the extremes of everything. But you go, really? You're at year 5. You're at year 20. You're at year, you know, and you're looking to get lucky. Right? Playing the fishing scratch off. Well, I'll get the right ticket one day, and I'll throw out my bucktail, and before I have to turn the handle, a big fish will eat it, and I'll reel it in, and I got him. You can't do it again, right? And that's the thing is all the things that we're discussing and kind of the practical application, the bare bones application of this, it makes it structured, not structure fishing, but structured. You're structuring your day, right? So you have a plan, right? And you're not just chalking it up to luck. And I trust me, there's days I get lucky and I'll take it, right? Stupid things happen, fish that, you know, 9 times out of 10 wouldn't hit, or 1,000,000 times out of, you know, wouldn't hit, but you get him. I'll take it. It happens. But there's so many stories of, well, you know, Ricky Bilbo freaking caught a Schlungosaurus Rex, right? Okay. Do it again, right? Do it again. One big fish, not impressed. Two big fish, not impressed. Right? It's repeatability. And the only way that you can have repeatable results is having a system. Right?
It's having a system and throwing your stubbornness out the window. Like most men are so stubborn with wanting to learn anything or thinking somebody's, you know, a little bit more in tune than they are when they're going out there. That's what bothers me about so many people that go out. It's just like, you know, open your mind a little bit and
open your mind.
Don't be stubborn about that whole tactic of, you know, Jimmy had a follow out there last year.
Yeah, out through last those weeds year.
And then just go out there. And,
Jimmy had a follow
that's fun,
last
but,
year.
You know, I think everybody included here wants to catch more fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, all the people that, you know, maybe only go musky fishing one weekend a year, you know, them included, they like to get a couple extra fish on that weekend, you know, instead of maybe seeing one.
That's why I say,
it requires determination and a little bit of effort. So it's just like, if you're not willing to do that, you know, stick with your game plan. So,
yeah,
whatever. Everyone has different expectations. So,
which are all good. Everybody there. I don't know anybody that goes that doesn't want to catch one.
If this was a growing, it's
not a competition because this is a growing hell. I was going to say growing flowers. That's probably more cutthroat and competitive than anything we do. But, you know,
growing flowers,
like, you know, horticulture, whatever.
Oh, okay.
This isn't bird watching. You know, it's like, we're going out to catch fish. Yes, the experience matters, but, you know, whatever. I mean, at a certain point, if you're just going out on boat rides, you know. So, but it's not like you have to be knocking them dead every time. But like you said, getting past that Jimmy got a follow last year. I love that. Like, I want a t-shirt that says Jimmy got a follow last year. I mean, mm-hmm. It pretty much sums it up. Right over there.
Yeah.
Pointing.
It's a great spot.
Right? Right over there. Caught a 47. Right over there. Win. 19 and 64. Okay. Cool. What have you done for me lately? Where applying it and applying the logic and reason, like you're saying, you know, everybody wants to pick up some extra fish and who doesn't? You know, who wouldn't want to be more successful? Again, that metric of what you think success on the waters is, that's up to you. You know, I'm saying there's no competition, but it makes no sense that you spend somebody would spend thousands of dollars on gear to go, well, I hope I get one day, you know. And to your point, Jay, the stubbornness, I see it more so than anything that there's like this school of thought where Jimmy got a follow over there last year. Okay. You're helpless. Sorry. Moving on. Right. I got dudes like that. Old cats all the time. And I go, well, all right. This is in one ear, out the other. It's going to sound stupid or why bother? Just go with it. You know what I'm saying? Okay, cool. Jimmy got a follow over there. We'll hit it. We'll hit that. We'll definitely hit that. You know, not worth the fight. And then you get the, you know, different ways in approaching it. And I think one of the hardest things for people on their own is they talk about it, but they're not acting upon it on the water. Right. when I talk to people like, hey, help, they want me to help them with their lake, or they want me to help them figure more stuff out.
Yeah.
Which is it's talking about it on dry land, but not doing it on the water. Right. I just want to catch a fish. Jimmy got a follow last year. I'm going to throw that luck, Jimmy's lucky bait. Right. Opposed to just coming out a little bit more zen, because they're stubborn, and then there's like desire, right? They're stubborn. I just got to catch one. I'm just got to get one. Go. Just want to follow. Just want this, doing that. Well, that thought process ends you right back in the same place stubborn does. Right? You end up at the same place.
Well, I see it all the time.
Yeah.
I see it all the time. Yeah. There'll be a guy come in and he'll be looking for
the bait the Jimmy got to follow on.
Yeah. That's it, Steve. Most obtuse colored combination bucktail that isn't made anymore. Right. You know, it's got to be that color. It's got to be that size. It's got to be that type blade. It's got to be that, you know, and it's just like, oh, wow. Okay. Copper blade with a purple skirt and with some white. And it's, you know what I mean? It's just okay.
And it can't be
anything made. No. Yeah. It's got to be that. It's like, well, you know.
And why? Geez, I mean, you ask why.
Though. You could, well. Yeah. You can't ask why, you know, you try to help them out find that or make it for them or something like that, just to satisfy their needs there, and duplicating a bait that's worn out that's all they've thrown for 20 years.
Yeah.
When they do go musky fishing, you know, and it's just like, cause Jimmy had a follow or Jimmy got one last year on that, which is cool.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. Go Jimmy, go.
But, got to think outside the box a little bit, you know?
Well, and I think like heck, we're kind of just, you know, talking concept and talking everything overall, which is just plays fine, because it's self-fulfilling prophecy. Musky fishing is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It really is. You know, if you're going with the Jimmy got a follow game, congratulations, you'll get your follow that week. You'll get it, right? You throw something enough, guess what's going to happen? If you throw a bait long enough, and you, like I said, if you go up to Lake Succotoban and you're, you know, the family fishes Lake Succotoban and we fish 7 days and then we go home and we never think muskies again, right? And you're content with, we got that one shot in 7 days, that's cool. But how can, it's not that hard. You know what I'm saying? It can be hard, but it's not that hard year after year after year. Or, hey, every weekend I'm going out. And I think, like I said, there's the guys that want to expand, but they get in their own way and you end up at the same place of stubbornness, because at a certain point, it's that ultimate desire. Well, I just want to put one in the net. I just want to put one in the net. I just want to put one in the net. And that desire kind of overtakes the logic and the reason that they would have on dry land. Right. And, you know, it's that classic, to every, you know, to a hammer, every problem's a nail. Right. So it depends on how we're looking at it. It's all perspective. If we're on this tip and just rambling, just a thought, you know, I was reading something else the other day. Wasn't fishing related, but I thought it resonated. There was this guy, as kind of a catty little post on X there, but you know, the guy said, you know, have you not, people talk about this gap and that gap, but nobody ever talks about the talent and skill gap, right? Talking some social political commentary the guy's making, but I thought about that. I went, okay. Talent and skill gap. Okay. Well, what skills and talents can we have as fishermen? Right. The only thing that talent wise, right, is a fisherman, like I'm a professional fisherman, whatever, is reaction speed. That's it. Right. I mean, the standard to being a professional angler, I mean, you got guys that make professional bowlers look healthy. Right, you know, not denigrating professional bowlers, but they're not known for their physicality, right? They're a little rotund. The only thing in fishing that's an advantage that you can't learn is just going to be reaction. That's it. Everything else is doable, right? And I don't think it's that great. It's not like the greatest advantage on planet Earth.
You're talking about physical reaction.
Physical ability. There's what does it matter? Can you cast? If you can cast a rod, you're fine. You know, the only advantage you could have would be your reaction time, right? And I've seen it. People get hit by a fish and they react too slow, and that they just have a slower reaction time, right? Opposed to, like, you know, snatching flies out of the air like Mr. Miyagi. That's it. It's not a deal breaker. It's not the end of the world, right? But you can be as klutzy as you want. You can be standing on the boat like a newborn giraffe. You know, you're not freaking, you don't have to be athletic is what I'm getting at. So the gap for people, it's not, you know, I'm not in the NBA because I'm not 6'9". You know what I'm saying? There's a limiting factor there. And, you know, you're not going to be in a professional sport, or you're not going to be in a certain section of life because of certain physical attributes or certain this or certain that. You know, fishing at a high level is not physical thought. It's mental. That's the difference. Is aside from, can you set the hook? Do you have a reasonable reaction time? That's it. You know, you feel fish hit, you set hook, reel it in. You know, so, you know, is an encouraging statement more so than anything. There's not some gap that you can't overcome to be really successful in the water. You know, it's a matter of being analytical. It's a matter of being thoughtful. It's not like, you know, say for only per point of example, it's not that I can cast further than someone else. It's not that I can reel faster. It's not that I can rip a bulldog harder, right? None of that matters. It's actually all the opposite. I can control myself and slow down, right? I can work things with finesse. You know, my program on my boat, dude, is like geriatric city, really. You know, the pounders were put away years ago. There's no freaking monster baits anymore. You know, I've got freaking 70-year-old clients' wives coming out and catching fish. Cause, okay, just give it a little tap, tap, let it wait, tap, tap. So it's not a physical thing; it's a thought process thing. You know, and a lot of that starts at conceptualization of what's taking place.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's all sure. I've been fortunate enough, hung out with a lot of dudes. I'm not talking musky. I'm talking, they're freaking musky's a joke compared to like real professional fishing. You know, guys that are making serious money. It's the pro stuff. That's the same deal. Every one of them go back to it all goes back to like buck pair. It goes back to structure fishing. It goes back to conceptualization, right? And freaking soapboxing, I'll shut up. But you'd said something earlier, Jay, about, you know, kind of the tip of, you know, you're getting out there. We're talking about coming on the weekend, or the guy that's been out there all week, he's got an advantage over this guy or that guy. You can't look at it that way, because it's all about how you're analyzing what's taking place on the water. You know, I've seen it. Guy's been there for 2 weeks and you show up into camp and just start greasing them because your perception of what was taking place was far more right than their perception. That's it. You know, because there's this deal. All right, we can't see, we got our live imaging. We can't see what's taking place under the water. There's a modicum of faith in fishing, right? There's a modicum of hubris and a modicum of you know, you're almost a soothsayer. You're looking into the future. You're guessing. You're trying to put together what's taking place subsurface with limited information, right? The fish are here. Where do I start? How do I do this? I'm kind of guessing. I'm throwing my bait out into the ether. I can't see under the water. We hope something takes place. Everybody's doing the same thing. The demarcation line between good, bad, ugly is how you're conceptualizing everything, right? Being realistic about it. That's another tip. Man, I'm just rabbit holing today. A huge portion of being successful on the water is admitting they're not doing what you want them to do, right? What does everybody want, Jay? Top waters and bucktails. Everybody. I want it.
Sure, it's fun.
It's fun. Well, Jay, how can you eat your pudding if you haven't ate your meat?
So, okay, and, Floyd.
CNO Floyd. But, you know, every day can't be, you know, rainbows, unicorns, and cupcakes.
Yeah, right.
It's not. Those are great days, but you've got to get down and dirty sometimes to get the job done. If the job at the end of the day is putting a fish in the net, it's not that. It's a very limited portion thereof. So conceptualizing realistically of what's taking place, you know, that a muskie is not the ravenous beast on the t-shirt you bought off Amazon. Right. He's coming out of the water.
If you were to go out and run and gun all day, mm-hmm. right? And hope for a break. We'll get one. Run and gun all day versus thinking tactically. How much time are you wasting?
Well, you're catching more fish. I mean, I'll tell you flat
out. You're going to.
I notoriously fish probably any more, less time than most people would think per day. Right? Why? Why go out there? Okay, I got to get, you know, say Jay, come, you book me and come with the trip. Okay, cool. All right, well, I'm not going to fish from sunup to sundown because this guy's not going to make it. When's the bite window going to be? Okay, I know something's going to happen there. Where would it happen? You know, and a lot of experience, you know, time on the water can't be beat, but smart, you can outsmart time in this game, right? You can outsmart experience, period. I mean, you know, I've done it myself. Joe Schmoe's fished this lake for 73 years. Well, okay, well, you know, he did it through sheer attrition and beating the water. Right? Yeah, you make enough casts, it'll happen. But you can go, okay, well, I can probably get it done 4 hours instead of 15. Right? And so you look at the time where, for me, I'm looking at things through a different lens anymore, through the physicality of fishing every day. Go, can I get this done in under 6 hours, please?
Right. Turn a half day into, you know, double productivity. Yeah. That's a cool goal to have, really.
And for me, it's not like how I'm just being honest. It's not a matter of how many I can catch in a day anymore. It's not. Don't care. Been there, done that. Got the t-shirt. Right. It's a different concept where I've got my client. They want to learn something. They want to spend some time on some different baits. Cool. I'm into that. I'm going, this is the bite window. This is where they'll be. This is what we need to have on. This is what we're going to do. Right. Hopefully it works. Every single day in the back of my head, I'm going, well, I hope this works. You know, still not, I'm not going walking down the ramp with a bunch of bravado. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going, I got this. There's still that brevity. Right. You know, but because if I had the bravado, Jay, we'd be out there for 20 minutes. Like, okay, meet me at 4. I'll have you at the dock at 4:45. Thank you. Exit through the gift shop. But, you know, expertise always out this time. Always. Time is, you know, whatever. Because if it's not quality fishing, if it's not well applied tactically, you're just outside. You know, you can catch as many muskies in your front yard, cast in the grass, right? There's not, if you can go cast in the cul-de-sac of your neighborhood and expect the same results if you're just winging it, you know? And I think that's the different approach is, and I was just rabbit hole, but talking about, you know, there's no physical attribute that makes somebody a great fisherman. Like I said, reaction speed to feeling something, tactile sense, you know, maybe if we're fishing ultralight trout crap, you're fishing crankbaits that pull like a bulldozer. If you can't feel that, you know, you might have neuropathy. You know, you can feel those baits. There's no doubt. So, you know, there's not some, I mean, there's tactical or tactile things you'll learn and you'll feel, but you don't have to have that to know you got to strike. You know, they're not mouthing it all the time. There's weird strikes and they do this and they do that. But, you know, there's not some crazy physical thing. It's more of a control, like a self-control thing to go, okay, I've chosen said area. Now I'm going to finally fit in that God rabbit hole. Oh my goodness. But it all ties, which is Jay was going from practical structure fishing, right? The next step is we've identified where we need to be, right? Now the next step of self-control and something that everyone has control over, but few use, is slowing yourself down to get maximum coverage of your target zone, right? Instead of blaring through it to the next. It's always the next spot. It's always in front of the boat, right? It's always the next, always the next, always the next. Where are we going next? What are we doing next? What next bait? Right? Looking for magic opposed to cover that area. You know, kind
of gotta cover it.
Gotta cover it. Why? What? If we've done our homework, there's only average body of water. Let's say there's 10 places they could be, right? The actively feeding muskies and the pattern we've identified, there's 10 places. And you've got all day, right? We got different bite windows. We've got different time, whatever. Running and gunning through it. You know, and a lot of that for me, get a party of three or four in the boat, right? Got a big boat. I can handle it. You get them in there. You got four dudes, four baits going through that water. And the last guy through catches a fish. And you're going slow.
Seen it.
Fam.
Seen it. Muskies don't move very far.
They don't.
Most of the time when they eat, they're not going to want to move very far from wherever they are positioned, however high, however near cover, however near structure.
Right.
That's just a proven thing. We've seen that a million times.
Well, and the problem is this. I'm bitching like I do on the boat now is what I'm doing. You got me. I'm cold. Still got my rain gear on, so I'm bitching. Which is back to the everybody wants it like the T-shirt, right? It says Jimmy moved one last year on the front. And it's got a muskie jumping with a bucktail on the back. Here came old Ironsides. Okay, cool. Happened once. Moving on. You know, it there's always an outlier. Every study, everything, and it's so funny that we, as a species, people focus, hyper focus their energy on the outliers. I was talking to Dr. Bob the other day. Jay, take a lake, right? That's, you know, 500 acres, one per acre. So we got 500 fish in a body of water, right? Just theoretical here. You got 500 muskies in a body of water, right? What's the percentile that are active per day? 100%? No. Right? 50? No. What's the percentile, right? Let's say we got 10% that are active. So we got 50 muskies and 500 acres that are active, right? Well, guess where the other 450 are? Bottom type somewhere on structure. So, I mean, just admitting that changes how you perceive it, right? So would you rather fish for 50 fish that are active or 450 fish you could trigger? Well, there's that. Okay. Well, let's say its conditions are bad. High, bright, sun, dead, flat, calm. We got 500 fish in a body of water. Not counting pressure, just you've magically found this lake that muskies you're just in, and there's no pressure. It's just there's 500 fish. And it's a cold front. Why am I going to spend all day hoping one does something that they don't do opposed to just freaking fishing low and slow? I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Does it make sense that they're going to be up in 2 feet of water, you know, with weeds around them and little weed pockets eating mayflies?
But
probably not that day.
People will base 30 years of muskie fishing on Jimmy moved one.
In that bay.
That cold front, yep. That cold front stuff's fooey, boys. He got one, his high bright sun, dead flat, calm, 34 degree water, and it crushed a Cannonball Junior. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. It could happen. I will not bet my life it'll happen today. Right. And there's all those outliers where the outlier stories or the outlier catches somehow overshadow, probably because they're more exciting, it's more interesting, they overshadow the reality of the situation, right? It's just taken as a whole, it makes no sense, right? Well, one time, any muskie story that starts with well, one time, is in one ear, out the other, right? Okay, yeah, dude, you'll find that one fish that's doing something different. Cool. You can have him. I'm going to fish for the rest of them that I know exactly what they're doing. They're on the bottom, not doing anything. And I got to get real close to him to get a chance.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
You know, it's kind of like, I'm not like the worst investor ever, Jay. I'm so like a, you know, when it's like comes to, I would love to just YOLO about 100K on crypto, but no, I'm going to go with the safe bet. That's me. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, it's safe, but it's playing the numbers, playing the statistics. It's going, okay, I'm going to bet on the averages. I'm not going to just bet on a gut feeling. I just look at how long I've been rambling. So it's like the longest talk that got nothing done, Jay.
We've got nothing done.
Got nothing. Just rambling. Steve Rant. It's a good old-fashioned rant. I'm cold. My wife made stew, and it was too hot to eat when I got in, Jay. Burnt my mouth. Mad.
Oh, boy.
Madder than hell. It was delicious stew once it cooled down. Have you ever been real hungry and just something too hot and you're just angry?
Yeah, taste buds get damaged that way, Steve. You got to be careful.
I know. That's why I flipped the table over and made a scene. Try to feed me hot stew again, woman. I shouldn't do that because last week I said women shouldn't fish, which was a joke. Everybody knew that. Whatever. Goodness, I'm just rabbit hoeing, Jay. Too much camping. Anyway, what do you say? Do you want to do another giveaway next week? We're almost. I want to give. Let's do it because I want to give something away. We got a bunch. We should have done a bunch of questions. I'm sorry. We'll add them to next week. We'll do another little giveaway before the Magnus, and then we'll do a little breakdown for everybody on that. So send some questions. We'll do one more Steve Stash.
Perfect.
Let's do this. Let's make it. What do you want to do? Because I got so many freaking baits. Because I've tried with the folks that have sent stuff, try to keep it kind of in the wheelhouse or whatever. Like, hey, they asked this kind of question. Try to tailor it, right, to the best of my ability. Just grabbing crap off the wall. But some use, some new, whatever. But with that being said, should we do it like, do we do like a rubber giveaway or something like that? Send your best big rubber questions. Whoever pick something. Let's see what that does or whatever.
Right, that's a world of possibilities there when it comes to fishing. You know, soft plastics for sure.
Send your best soft plastics thing, and then whoever we pick, we'll give a bunch. I got freaking enough. I could tile my house, my roof, and bulldogs, Jay.
All the petroleum products.
Just melt.
It's a fire hazard.
Up there, dude, up there with a torch, just melting them like you're tarring a roof.
Ooh,
anyway.
But they smell good, though.
Well, that was ranty, folks. Condolences.
Yeah, it was good, though.
And once again, condolences to Jimmy the horse. That's actually a sad scene. That's not.
But
my God, the news up there is funny.
Yep. I'll try for another one next week. I'll keep my ears open.
All right, later.
Bye-bye.
Shield Ride. New Wheel Power Pro. Surface Bait. Big Net. No Clue. Steve's Book Podcast. Muskie. Muskie. Muskie.